The following programming is sponsored by Don Beischel. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group.
Hey, Uncle Sam, put your name at the top of his list. And the Statue of Liberty started shaking her fist. And an eagle will fly, and it's gonna be here. When you hear Mother Freedom start ringing her bell.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Conservative Voice here on WWDB 860 AM. I'm Don Beischel Jr., and I'm here every week to let you know what's going on in the world of conservative politics. Before we get going, I want to talk a couple things. So first of all, obviously, everybody by now has seen the blowback that the reporter that interviewed John Fetterman got the other day. And all she was doing was reporting what she observed as a reporter. I mean, that's a reporter's job. And unfortunately, you know, you have this left-wing media conglomerate that is hell-bent on protecting Democratic candidates. And right now in the state of Pennsylvania, we have two very important elections. We have the election for U.S. Senate and the election for Pennsylvania governor. And I've been saying this all along, that this election is a line in the sand election, because quite honestly, not only does the future of Pennsylvania rest on the election for governor in the state of Pennsylvania, but in 2024, the presidential election will rest on the outcome of this gubernatorial election. Because you can mark my words, if Josh Shapiro smells the governor's office, we will not elect a governor in the state of Pennsylvania while he's in office. Because we've seen what they did in 2020, how they manipulated election law with the help of their 5-2 Pennsylvania Supreme Court to basically bastardize the law that was passed by the state legislature. But nobody wanted to hear it. So I think it's important for people to realize that when somebody like this woman that interviewed Fetterman gives her observations of how the guy just can't understand what's being said to him, you know, you need to understand the consequences of electing somebody to a 6-year term that quite honestly couldn't possibly do the job. Now, on the other side of the spectrum with the governor's race, I mean, here we have, you know, I need to say this because I think it's important people to realize this. Well, here we have Josh Shapiro. He's a far left extremist, and he has failed as a career politician. His whole life has been just each position he has been a stepping stone to another position, because all he's interested in is being president of the United States. Okay, he could care less about the people of Pennsylvania, just like he couldn't care less about the people of Montgomery County when he was commissioner of Montgomery County. And he certainly didn't care about the people of Pennsylvania as attorney general. So, you know, as attorney general, Josh has left the streets of Philadelphia overflowing with crime and fentanyl overdoses. He sued to keep small businesses shut down and children out of schools. He sued a little of the Sisters of the Poor, not once, but twice. He made it clear that he won't hesitate to coerce women into injecting their children with experimental pharmaceuticals. He'll remove religious and philosophical exemptions in schools, leaving thousands of kids without education. You know, the list goes on to what this guy stands for. I mean, for example, they like to say that Senator Mastriano is an extremist. Well, I say that Josh Shapiro is an extremist on the issue of abortion because he believes in abortion up to and including during birth. Is that what you believe in? Is that the candidate that you want to elect? That's what I want you to ask yourself the question, okay? You know, so this November 8th coming up, we have a choice. You know, and it's never been a more stark choice than what we are faced with now. We have a constitutional conservative with Judeo-Christian values like Doug Mastriano, or we have a far-left extremist like Josh Shapiro who could care less about anybody but himself. You know, if Doug becomes elected, if your choice is that you want a governor that will be tough on crime, defend parental rights, have transparency in education, implement school choice, remove property taxes, and bring a free and flourishing economy back to the state of Pennsylvania, the choice has never been more simple. So, ladies and gentlemen, joining us as he does every week, the Republican gubernatorial candidate for governor, State Senator Doug Mastriano. Doug, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on. I'm broadcasting to you from Pittsburgh. We had a fantastic event in a Democrat stronghold area out just outside the city. And, Don, it was a meet and greet. But we had 500 people come out, not unlike what happened in Chester County, you know, with you a couple of weeks ago. There were no naysayers, no protesters. We took time to meet and greet several hundred people. There was no negativity or criticism. Something big is going on in Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it can't be denied. You know, what we're hearing from the media and what have you, they're trying to suppress the fact that we do have this massive excitement and energy. And how do you measure that? And the only way you can measure that is with the results on 8 November.
Well, and we're basically now approximately 24 days out, starting tomorrow, I believe. And I'm under the same I'm observing the same things that you are, is that when you're out there now, the excitement is building. I mean, there are people that are now, like, you know, before maybe they were sitting on the sidelines, but now they're contacting. How can we help? Can we get signs? Do you need us to work a poll? Do you need us to do this? Do you need us to do that? So I think people are starting to realize the enormity of the consequences of not getting involved.
And it's tangible. And you're absolutely right. You know, we're kept strong because of the people. People are small dollar donations, you know, from $5 to, you know, $5,000 on, you know, online largely. The people, that's high quality people, business owners, professionals, you know, stay-at-home moms, people pouring their lives and energy into giving us a victory, people banging on doors, 17,000 doors last week by volunteers. I mean, phone calls, stuffing envelopes, it's just incredible. Some of the videos you see, some of our advertisements, high quality stuff. I mean, that you pay good money for, you know, but say it's done by volunteers. I mean, it's incredible. We have five massive large billboards up in the Pittsburgh area thanks to volunteers raising the money and doing something. I mean, and this is something that hasn't been seen before in Pennsylvania history at the state level.
Well, you know, I'm going to share a couple things with you. First of all, we found out last night that the Shapiro campaign is paying people $50 to put his signs on their lawns. So I find that extremely interesting that, you know, we've got people begging us for signs and he's paying people to put signs on their lawns. And then on the other hand, we've had a gentleman step up in Montgomery County who has offered to pay for some billboards in the Philadelphia area for us. I don't think you were even aware of that, because we just kind of found this out last night. And so the momentum is building, and I think that people are – I hate to say it, but I think, you know, they're waking up to the fact that there are consequences for sitting on the sidelines. I mean, we've said this, you know. I mean, we saw it in COVID, the consequences of not paying attention to the Supreme Court nominee, you know, elections and stuff like that. But now people are starting to realize, seeing the failures of the Biden administration – the failures of Josh Shapiro as Attorney General in Pennsylvania, how it's affected the city of Philadelphia with Larry Krasner there. This is just to me, I see a snowball effect. It's not going to be reflected in any poll or any mainstream media. This is a groundswell, and your movement has always been a grassroots movement.
And that's the difference. I mean, it's incredible. But you have to pay people to put yard signs up. Are you kidding me? And we have, you know, several hundred thousand yard signs out, and we can't keep them on the shelves. You know, you're pushing them out in the southeast, and it's like, you know, hotcakes going out there. When we're at fairs, we'll go through all that are on hand, you know, maybe a stack of 100, and people are like, where do we get more from? And so But, you know, the bottom line, what really does matter, that is fantastic. We are hopeful. You know, Rasmussen, a generic Pennsylvania poll, is looking at Republican 48 turnout and Democrat 45. I think it's going to be greater than that. But if what matters is the next 25 days we finish strong. And so, you know, let's double our efforts. Ron DeSantis, when he was with Rebbe and I back in August and with his wife Casey, he told us there'd be suppression polls coming out right before the election, a month out or so. The numbers will start looking nefarious. He warned us not to look at them because they showed him losing by double digits and he won Florida. They showed this time last year, Glenn Youngkin, and there was no chance he could win the race. And of course, everyone was shocked when he won. And what's funny about the left is they start to believe their own propaganda, which is kind of funny. They start believing these numbers that they fabricate are true. So, you know, John Shapiro can't draw flies. He can't draw an audience. And despite the support of the adoring media that you know, amplifies his message, he just can't pull it together. And so we see no way for victory for him ahead. We're doing our own analytics internally, and every scenario we run, you know, based off this moment in time here, shows a pretty great victory. But it does matter. Please get out the vote, and please make sure you do your part, because this means nothing unless you actually do your part.
Well, one of the things that we've been stressing as we've been talking to the volunteers and recruiting volunteers, that one of this how Glenn Youngkin was successful in Virginia is that they had 92% poll coverage in the state of Virginia. And so one of the things that we think it's important for people to realize is that they play an important part of talking to voters as they come into the polls. And I know people have a hard time believing that a lot of people don't know who they're voting for, or they may have a question when they're walking into the poll. But that's the facts. I've been doing this for a long time. And I tell the story that during the primary, I was working a poll, and 10 people came into my poll with Lou Barletta stuff in their hand. And by the time I got done talking to them, the Barletta stuff was in the trash, and they had your stuff in their hands. And so I tell people that story because I think they need to realize that as a poll greeter, they are the last chance to get somebody to vote for Doug Mastriano. If that's their choice, if they want to vote for the right person, you know, then it's important that we have coverage at the polls so people can hear exactly what you stand for if they have a question about you.
And that's the thing. So obviously we're very reliant upon the people. The people have propelled Rebbe and I to this position. The people urged us, and you know, in many cases, sometimes with tears in their eyes, to run for governor over the past several years. The people are sustaining us with their donations, with their volunteerism, and so the last hurdle, obviously, is that we have enough people manning the polls. And so there's several levels of poll working that you can do or volunteerism. One is actually, you know, a poll watcher. Somebody who's trained, and you'll be, you know, taught at one of our classes on what to look for. You'll be trained, and you'll be standing there professionally, behind the scenes, making sure there's accountability and transparency in the election process at that polling station. Or, as Don said, a poll greeter, where you're there, you're standing 10 feet away from the door, you know, the entrance, and you're there to one last time to pitch Mastriano. And it's, you know, the numbers are iffy on this here, but you know, I've heard this, that they have an effect of, you know, upwards of 10% of the vote sometimes,
yes.
So, you know, influencing the outcome. And, you know, I know, Don, you've done that very much. I don't know if you want to speak to that more.
Well, one of the things that I say to people all the time is, you know, Josh Shapiro and the Democrats like to brag that they've raised $30 million, $40 million and stuff like that, you know, because they seem to think that, you know, your viability as a candidate is based on money. Now, we know that's not true from the Stacey Garrity election. But what I tell people when I'm talking to the volunteers for the Mastriano campaign is the volunteers, are our $30 million. You know, they're boots on the ground, their voice, their willingness to talk to people. That is worth more than $30 million. And because what I say to people is, how did you come to meet Doug? Okay. And I say that to them. I say, because when you're talking to people, you need to convey that here is a guy, you, who during the pandemic was willing to do fireside chats and go to talk to people. You weren't running for governor. You were a state senator in Franklin County. I mean, you know, there was no benefit for you to come to Montgomery County or go out to Erie or anything like that. You were just doing it because people, you gave people hope. And now what I see is that this is the people's way of thanking you, because nobody asks for anything. They just jump in and do it. I see it all the time. I mean, they're on the side of the road waving flags and signs, this is an unmeasurable metric that you have, I think you have going for you.
Yeah, it really is. You know, how do you quantify somebody pouring, you know, hours and labor and love and passion into supporting a candidate? You know, the fact that Josh Shapiro, you know, he has a lot of money. I mean, that's, you got to hand it to Democrats across the nation. A lot of it's dark money, and a lot of it are from sources, you know, that I'm kind of pressed to talk about, but it'll distract us from the whole topic here.
Right.
But he has to pay people to put yard signs up. He has to pay people to knock on doors. He has to pay people. And where's the enthusiasm? You know, Rebbie and I've been on the campaign, you know, trail many times now. And, you know, there was one paid volunteer at a polling station for another candidate. And they're like, yeah, I'm here for so-and-so, but I actually support you. I mean, so it's funny.
Well, you know, we saw this in action when we did the Latino town hall in Philadelphia. They had these protesters, and we found out later on that they were paid protesters, out in front, you know, with the bullhorn and all that stuff like that. And the funny thing is, as soon as you walked in, they left, you know, because they got their paycheck. They were there. They were walking around in a circle with the bullhorn and stuff like that. You walk in and they disappear, you know. And I mean, our people, when they're at a rally, you know, they never disappear. You know, they're there afterwards helping to clean up, collecting yard signs, making sure the venue is – a lot of times the venues are left in better condition than when we got it. You know, so, I mean, I think that this is a movement. Barry Casper said it best, the Bucks County coordinator, because he was heavily involved in Trump in 2016. And he said that your movement – and your supporters is the Trump movement of 2016, but on steroids.
Wow.
And so, you know, I see it. I've been doing this a long time. I see it. I think that it's a testament to your willingness to stand for what you believe in, regardless of the political pressure, regardless of the so-called political experts telling you that you have to soften your stance on this, or you shouldn't talk about this, or da 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 da. I think people respect somebody that is willing to speak the truth and is willing to stand by their convictions. And I guess my question to you is, I don't think it's been difficult for you, but speak to some of the pressure you've gotten from some of the establishment people that you should maybe change your tact, so to speak.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of well-meaning people out there that have never run for office or a statewide campaign that you know, that have all this great advice. You need to run more TV ads. Like, okay, that's a great idea. How about if you donate and help us do that?
You know? It's funny. People don't really realize the cost involved in some of this stuff. like they'll say to like, I'll have people say, oh, hey, can you get me 200 signs? I'm there. Yeah, well, write me a check. I can get you whatever you want. You know, I mean, you know, and it's funny in a way, but it's not, because your campaign has done stuff without the support of some traditional funding sources. And the one that I'm going to be highly critical of is the Republican Governors Association. I got a problem with that. And you went out there, you spoke to them, and yet they have not, as of yet, you know, there's always hope, but as of yet, they have not come through. And it bothers me that there are so-called Republicans out there that are not supporting your movement.
and the Democrats get it. They understand that Pennsylvania, as you opened up the show with, if 2024 goes through Pennsylvania, whatever Shapiro's ambitions are, it doesn't matter. We need a governor that's going to do election reform. That's me. Without that, Pennsylvania's all but lost. There'll be no major reforms of election integrity and what have you in the state. And the Democrat Party, they see that Pennsylvania is the keystone state. And that's why instead of, you know, hedging their bets in Pennsylvania and trying to help to win seats in other, you know, races around the country, they've poured about $40 million into Shapiro's campaign. I mean, I do acknowledge that. And that sadly, you know, on the Republican side, we just, the people of Pennsylvania get it, and many people, many patriots across the nation get it, but these establishment-type organizations, many of them don't. Now, just for clarity's sake here, we are working fantastic with the state party. State GOP is outstanding.
Yes.
I mean, no complaints. Absolutely superb. But, yes, the Republican Governors Association, and they have raised money from generous donors in the energy sector in Pennsylvania. And these donors were told that money raised by, you know, given to them out of Pennsylvania would come back to Pennsylvania. That has not happened. And I expect them to honor their word to the donors that have been giving generously through that organization, them assuming that they would help the gubernatorial race. Because, you know, chasing fantasies, you know, in Oregon or in Connecticut and what have you, and these other governor races here, those are nice. But that'll have almost no effect. It'll have no effect on the country. Pennsylvania will, because this state in 2024, I believe, is going to determine the outcome of the presidential election. And if we don't get it right this year, our elections will still be questionable at best.
And I think that one of the things that I have heard from talking to different people is by these national organizations doing what they're doing, I've heard people say to me, they're not going to contribute anymore to these organizations. They're going to contribute directly to the candidate or to the state. And, you know, in the long run, it's going to hurt us as a party because, you know, there are going to be certain races that are going to have a pivotal impact. For example, the Herschel Walker race in Georgia, you know, that could be a key component to us flipping the Senate. You know, and if people are going to be less likely to offset, you know, this dark money that comes in from the Democrats, I mean, this whole aspect of, you know, saying that, you know, this person's unelectable, or that person's unelectable, it only hurts us as a party. And I just don't understand it. I mean, there's nothing in my view anyway, there's nothing in your positions that I consider extreme, and I think most Americans would not consider somebody that believes in God, that believes in life, that believes in personal liberties and freedoms. I mean, that's what this country was founded on, and that's all you're out there talking about.
You know, in the end, our ideals are very mainstream. I mean, we believe that the girls' athletic team should not have boys on them. We believe that kids in elementary school should not be sexualized. I believe that kids should not be confused, the elementary kids, you know, with pronoun games in schools. And I believe they should not be exposed to, you know, graphic material in the elementary school. And we believe, of course, that you should have the choice as a parent or guardian of your kid's education. We believe in school transparency of the curriculum. You know, we believe that there should be no boys in the girls' bathroom. My opponent is a radical. He believes in the opposite. Josh Shapiro even believes in, you know, and notice the media won't ask him about his record on crime. He's got one job. His job is to enforce the laws of the state of Pennsylvania and to be the, you know, the top cop, as he calls himself, which is fraud, by the way. But as the senior law enforcement of the state, he has failed us. You know, we look at the Southeast. That is a disaster created and fomented and supported and aided and abetted by Josh Shapiro, because he's had the resources, he's had the power, he has the office, and he did nothing. And the media lets him get away with literal murder. You know, we'll put the homicides on his head. You know, it's so dangerous there now. 1,000 carjackings and spilling over out into the suburbs now. And this is going to affect him. This is why he's going to lose, because he's incompetent and he really is unfit for office. And then to put our girls at risk in the bathrooms, Josh Shapiro fought so hard for the right of boys to go into girls' bathrooms. And this time last year, he filed an amicus against the people of Virginia and also Florida. Shapiro won in Virginia. And this time last year, a 15-year-old girl was raped by a pervert in the girls' bathroom in school. And, you know, the dad found out there was a cover-up in Loudoun County. Virginia. And he was hauled out in handcuffs for being a little upset at a school board meeting. That is how radical and extreme. These guys want to shut you down. They've locked us out. You know, it's not enough Josh Shapiro stood aside and did not defend your constitutional rights because he loves his party politics more than the people and the Constitution, that he sued to keep your kids in mass. And, you know, thank God for Jamie Cohen Walker, who sued him, countersued him last year and beat him down in Chester County. He also sued to keep your business shut down. Josh Shapiro, over the past 6 years as the Attorney General, but especially the past 2 years during this crisis, this shutdown, and I'll call it a constitutional crisis, he was afforded many, many opportunities to do the right thing and to defend your freedoms. And every time he's given such an opportunity, he consistently chose to do the wrong thing.
Well, you know, the thing that is important for people to realize. So one of the things you were just talking about, let's talk about, you made a trip to Kensington with no fanfare, no photographers. You didn't make it a photo op, but you wanted to see what was going on down there. And of course, I tell the story as a kid. My grandmother and mother used to take us there to go shopping because Kensington, when I was a kid, was the shopping district. You went there for school clothes. You went there for Christmas shopping. It's a little bit different now. And part of the problem is that Josh Shapiro's lax positions on immigration, of allowing illegal immigrants to come here to the state and Philadelphia to be a sanctuary city, his weak position on crime, you know, letting people out of jail that shouldn't be out of jail. You know, let's just talk about the fentanyl problem in Philadelphia and what you saw, and, you know, then we can go from there.
Yeah, you know, Rebbie and I needed to see it and needed to speak with the people that live there. And, you know, it's heartbreaking. You know, we met one young lady whose husband died, of course, of overdose, we believe. And she used his money that she inherited from him to actually help addicts, those that want to try to get off of this vicious cycle of addiction. We walked downtown with several pastors, many of whom were also addicted and living on the street. You know, and their lives are turned around, you know, by Jesus, by faith-based programs that Tom Wolf and Josh Shapiro have forbidden the state to work with now. And they tell me they have a 70% recovery rate as opposed to the 30% recovery rate with the state programs. You know, so on day one, we're going to bring common sense back to the Commonwealth. We're going to work with any organization or agency that is helping those who are stuck on the cycle of addiction to break out of it. On the other side, law and order. I mean, it's heartbreaking what was going on down there. And we got to speak with a mom that lives by the Kensington Park, you know, in the midst of this, and a grandma who's raising, you know, five kids in a home that she owns. And both of them feel stuck. They, you know, neither one can afford to give up their houses at this point here and then move elsewhere to a safe neighborhood. And one of the moms told us that the kids know the difference between gunshots and firecrackers. I mean, are you kidding me? That same, you know, grandma, the same grandma said that somebody was one of the homeless people was assassinated across the street by the children's park. They removed his body but left parts of him behind, and The kids were walking through. They were walking through that for a week until it got cleaned up. They've been forgotten. They've been abandoned, and that's a personification. That is the look of Pennsylvania on Josh Shapiro. You know, what happened in Wawa and Mayfair 2 weeks ago with the 30 kids, you know, doing $10,000 of damage? What happened in Roxborough, the shooting after the football game? The normally nice areas. This is a glimpse of what's going to happen. God forbid, should Shapiro win. I mean, so much is at stake. This is no game. The margin between him and I, you know, I should be double points ahead of him to how radical and extreme he is. And so the way ahead here, Pennsylvania, is that we got 25 days left. You know, so over 3 weeks. That's a lifetime, an election cycle here. We need your help. Go to DougForGov.com. Sign up to be a volunteer on election day. Be willing to make phone calls now, knock on doors, put out signs, donate money, whatever you can. We're looking at one more big ad buy, you know, based off how much money we actually have. So if you're able to kick in some money at DougForGov.com, please do so. The money will be used to get our message out.
And one of the things I want to tell people is that the campaign is very meticulous about how they spend money. They're very particular, and they want to make sure that they spend the people's hard-earned money in a sensible way. You know, you brought up Wawa. I don't know if you saw that today, but they announced today that they are closing two stores two Wawas in Center City, Philadelphia, because of the rampant crime that goes on in the stores. Yeah, 4th and Market and 19th and Market, I believe. You know, we're talking about Center City, Philadelphia, where the Liberty Bell is and everything like that, and yet Wawa, of all people, are saying, we've had enough, we can't do it anymore.
You know, things are bad, you know, when that happens. So I do have to sign off or ahead to Erie. So my final thought is, so last night we were outside of Pittsburgh in a Democrat stronghold, and there was nothing but love and support and enthusiasm in the room. You can go to my social media and see for yourself. We're leaving now for Erie, another Democrat stronghold. This is our fifth visit there. We're expecting about 500 or 600 people. Jack Posobiec will be there with us. It's going to be a great crowd. Stacey Garrity will be there. I mean, it's going to be fantastic. So it's going to be at the Bayfront Convention Center tonight at 6 p.m. I hope you guys can join me out there.
Super. Well, thank you, Senator, and we'll hopefully speak to you again next week. But good luck in Erie. And again, if you need to find out more information about Senator Mastriano, go to www.doug4gov.com. Okay, well, thank you, Senator, and we'll talk to you again. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to have on the congressional candidate in the 2nd District of Congressional District running in Philadelphia, a frequent guest on the show. He's a great guy, Aaron Beshear, and he will be on our next guest after this short break.
Hi, this is Don from the Conservative Voice.
Are you looking for new business cards? Need new menus for your restaurant? Signs old and outdated? Employees need new shirts? Cars, trucks, and vans need new signage? Look no further than Mann Custom Wear. Located at 2250 State Road in Bensalem, Pennsylvania, Mann Custom Wear can fill all those needs and much more. At Mann Custom Wear, the owner, Mark, takes great pride in providing his customers with a superior product that is sure to catch the eye of potential customers and wow your existing clients. So if you're looking for a change, if you're looking to increase business and visibility, reach out to Mark at Mann Custom Wear. He can be reached at 215-651-8932, by email at markcolt45@hotmail.com, or on the web at www.mancustomwear.com. Mann Custom Wear, your one-stop shop for all your design and printing needs.
And welcome back to the Conservative Voice here on WWDB 860 AM. And now we're going to be bringing on our next guest for this next half hour. He's running for Congress in Pennsylvania's 2nd Congressional District. We're going to be bringing on Aaron Beshear. Aaron, welcome to the show, my friend.
Thank you, Don, for having me. It's always an honor to be here.
Oh, it's great for you to be here, too. So, obviously, you heard Senator Mastriano, who was on before, talking about the city of Philadelphia and some of the things that he wants to institute. And I know that you and him are on the same page on many of these items. I believe, in fact, probably all of them. But let's talk about, because I know the one thing that I know is very passionate for you is the school choice situation. You have young children. And I know it's a cornerstone of your campaign. It's near and dear to Senator Mastriano's heart as well. So why don't you speak a little bit about school choice, why it's important for the people of Philadelphia, what your personal experience and why what you see that why this is an important subject.
Well, right now, Dan, our school district is not performing well, and it is an established fact. They have tried so many things, but it's not performing. Right now, the schools that are, you know, following school district, there is like 50% performance, actually lower than that. We are the bottom 50% performing schools in Pennsylvania. Our reading is like less than 43%, and math reading is less than 23%. That's how bad the schools in Philadelphia, the public schools, are. Now, there are billions of dollars being invested in the school district. However, there are no results. And I believe that with half of the money what's being given to school district, if it is given to the parents where they could use the money, and I absolutely support Senator Doug's plan that, you know, the money should follow the child. Parents should have the choice to send their children where they wanted to. So if that money, for example, now I gave up on the school district and I just took my kids out of the public school and just put them in the private school this year. So why can't we use the money that is given to the Philadelphia school district, which is not performing well, which is so much politicized, which is so corrupt, and which is putting the policies out there, for example, critical race theory and all the other nonsense, attacking gender, confusing kids. So why can't they take that money and use that in any private school of my choosing as a dad? You know, as a parent, that's what we should have, and that's what I'll push for. You know, parents should be the authority in deciding where their children go, you know, and if the government is subsidizing all that education that shouldn't be given to a school district that doesn't perform well for decades, you know, the graduation rate is so low, and then the kids who are coming out of the school district, you know, they're going wild. For example, we saw what's happening on the streets of Philadelphia, a lot of crimes that are committed by mostly these are the troubled teenagers that come in out of the school district. That means something is not there, that's not being taught there. And I do believe it's the values that they're not teaching. They always are telling children to challenge the authority. You know, they always make it an issue of race and color. It's all about, like, you know, a certain segment of history where, that is being pushed harder and harder, but not the real values that thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not steal. You know, you got to respect your father and mother. You got to respect the society. You got to respect law and order. And that's what's really, really missing out there. And I do believe that school district is not going to perform well, regardless of what they do, regardless of how much more millions of dollars we spend on it, unless they start teaching the values. And that's what needs to be taught in the schools.
So, Aaron, let me ask you this, because a lot of our listeners may not know this, but you were a teacher by profession. That was what you used to do. So maybe explain to the viewers, because the Democrats like to push this narrative that school choice is anti-teacher. I and others, and I know you do, believe that actually school choice is pro-teacher, and it actually will help the good teachers excel more. How do you see it, and can you dispel this myth that school choice actually hurts teachers versus helps them?
Well, they say in a nice, you know, everyday language, if you have nothing to hide, if you are on the right side, you don't need to be scared of anything. So if you're a hardworking teacher, if you're an educator, it doesn't matter, you know, where you're working, whether it's a charter school or private school or a public school. If you are putting in your 100%, you know, you don't need to worry about anything. What school choice does is it holds the school district more accountable. It puts them in a position where now they have to compete for that dollars, which are just given to them freely without any accountability and transparency, because they keep like hiding after one after another excuse that, you know, this is that, and that's why the children are not performing well. Well, it is just the lack of discipline in the schools. It's lack of the values in the school. It's nothing about the teachers at all, because you still will be, you know, getting most probably the same compensation what you're getting now. So the school choice will not help only the students, but the teachers as well. It will establish some standards. It will establish some competition. So in that way, everyone can perform better. And that's why I'm a big fan of school choice. For example, a little story on my end. We are raising three children in Philadelphia, and they are the hard to raise in Philadelphia culture, regardless of how much hard work you put into them. When they go to the schools, the public schools, it's the environment that gets them, the environment where there is so much bullying, the environment where there is lack of discipline, the environment where they don't talk about God, you know, where they don't talk about the real values, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not kill, you know, thou shalt honor your father and mother, And that honor also, you know, comes all the way to respect the law, to respect your neighbors, to respect all the other adults. So that's what's missing from the school district. When you want to remove God from the school, you know, when you want to remove prayer and Bible, then these kids are lost and they are going wild. And it is established fact they are going wild. They are killing each other. You know, they are killing people on random because they don't have respect for life and the property. We all remember that they just took a cone, the traffic cone, and started to hit a senior who was just asking them why they were on the streets so late. So that's how those kids are lost, because of the school district, because they are not teaching them what they are supposed to teach them. And I'm sick and tired of that. Well, and as a future congressman, I will hold the school district accountable. I will make sure that they perform. If they don't, you know, definitely there will be, you know, consequences for that.
So obviously, Aaron, you came to this country from Pakistan. And so you come here where in America, you're supposed to, you advance through hard work and dedication to your craft. And I think that school choice would reward those teachers that produce the results, that put their students first instead of just biding their time so they get their pension or their paycheck. And so that's, to me, school choice goes to the essence of the American dream of advancement through competition. I mean, as somebody that came to this country for the American dream, do you see it that way, that school choice actually not only obviously would benefit the students, but can actually benefit the good teachers as well?
Absolutely. You know, I just started to teach at this Christian school, and these teachers are getting half of the money what the teachers are getting in the school district. But they are so dedicated, so committed, and they work. When even they go home, they are still working on checking the homework, grading, you know, preparing the lessons. So they are getting paid less half of the money what the school district teachers are, and they're still performing 10 times better than the school district, right? So it's not about, like, you know, the compensation, the salary that they always complain about, the benefits. It's about the dedication and commitment to the job. It's your passion for the children. And I'm not saying they're all teachers like that in the school district, but they're like many like that. So we need to work on that. I'm an American dream. You know, I came as an immigrant in 2001 here. I worked hard. I went to community college. I went to Temple, LaSalle. I taught at community college. You know, I taught at other institutions. Now I'm teaching at this. So I have taught at a couple of institutions. So at the end of the day, when there are consequences, when you're being held accountable, then, you know, people perform better. Right now, that's what's missing in Philadelphia school district. First of all, they keep hiding behind so many excuses. And, you know, that's the reason our children are lost in the streets. You know, and then especially because of COVID-19, how the schools were shut down, all those ridiculous policies they followed. We see the frustrations. We see that, you know, the gap, the deficiency of, you know, that 1 year that was missed by the children, that lack of, you know, socialization, that behavior is kicking out right now. And we kept telling people that, you know, it was a bad idea to shut down the schools. So our governor, Tom Wolf, didn't listen to us. And his school district administration, they didn't listen to that. Now we see the results. You know, like, the kids are lost. The more violent crimes are happening on the streets of Philadelphia. And mostly these are the teenagers who are, like, just in the ski masks, you know, doing all the nonsense on the wawas and doing all that crap, hurting people, you know, threatening people, stealing stuff, you know, and going online buying illegal guns. So this is the time we stop this. We have to stop this, and school choice is one of the good options that can offer a great solution to this problem, that now the schools are being held accountable. You know, the money is going to follow to those schools who perform well, and that means now they will be more strict with the families, with the parents, and I'm saying as a parent, you know, sometimes you need that, you know, so you could have great kids that you need to raise in Philadelphia. Otherwise, you know, we don't want to see the chaos keep going worse and worse and worse, which is already out there. We have more than 462 murders in 2021. Now we have like more than 420 murders in just last 10 months, and people are dying on the streets, you know, and this needs to be changed. And it's all starting from the schools.
Well,
we must feed the children.
And I would say, Aaron, quite honestly, that, you know, school choice, well, you know, obviously, I hate to say it, but a lot of times in the public schools, the parents abdicate their responsibility to the teachers, which is not fair. So school choice would actually bring it more into an equitable situation where the parents also are going to be held responsible for the actions of their kids, whether it's doing their homework or keeping them at home to get the homework done and to produce the results, because obviously the money will follow the student, and that's going to be based on educational outcome. So we do have a caller on the line. She wants to make a comment. One of our frequent callers. Oh, Pauline, you're on the line.
Hi, Don. How you doing? Hi, Aaron. I just wanted to tell everybody that I do talk to people when I'm out and about. I said this before, and I just want most of the people who think about abortion all the time, they're like in the minority, because I'm talking to people who are actually agreeing with Doug Mastriano about the state of this state. And abortion is not the number one concern. The economy is, what's going on in the schools is. I know you're talking about the schools right now. They're in Boyertown Area High School, there was a horrific thing going on where they made an 11th grader boy undress in the girls' locker room to get the girls acclimated to having naked boys in their locker room. That happened in Boyertown Area High School. It's like 20 miles from me.
It's the things that are happening now. And I didn't mean to cut you off there, Pauline, but you know, you're making an absolutely great point here. That and Aaron was talking about this a little bit when he was talking about school choice and stuff, is that not only are we talking about the lack of educational outcome, but there just seems to be a lack of morality, of social acceptance, and again, young girls deserve to have their privacy, but so do young boys. You know, there's a lot of young boys that are also shy, and we shouldn't be throwing them into sexualized situations, because, you know, puberty's hard enough. You know, I hate to say it, you know, but it's true. Yeah, puberty is hard enough. And now we're making it doubly difficult by either thrusting them into a situation that makes them even more uncomfortable and forcing them to, you know, question simple biology.
Yes.
That's right.
The whole thing about the pronouns is disturbing to children. The whole thing about having drag queens come in and read to kindergartners is disturbing to those children. It traumatizes them. And yep. I don't know why these so-called experts don't get that.
Nope, you're absolutely correct. Well, thanks, Pauline, for calling in. I really appreciate it. And I'm glad you brought that Boyertown situation to light, because I think people need to realize that, you know, we have that. We had the horrific shooting in Roxborough at the football game.
Yep.
You know, the things are out of control. And until we stand up and realize it, and we elect people like Aaron, we elect people like Doug Mastriano, you know, that are willing to stand up and tell the truth. You know, sometimes, you know, the truth might not be pretty, but it needs to be heard. So thanks, Pauline, for calling in. I appreciate it. Aaron, again, you know, so obviously we know how you stand on school choice. I mean, and we've talked about this before, and your background helps you come up with a good feeling for that. So running for Congress, obviously you would have you would be making decisions on a federal level, but a lot of school funding comes from the federal government. So I guess one of my questions would be, and I do want to get into the fentanyl situation a little bit, a little bit later as we keep talking, but I want to finish up our thoughts on school choice here. So from a federal level, How do you see your role as a congressman with federal funding for schools, and, you know, as far as the money, you know, not coming into districts just on a blanket thing, but as being available again to the parents, to the students?
The way I see it, that, as I said, the funding must be based on some provisions. Okay, if the school performance, if the school doesn't do better, then they should be held accountable, right? And that what that means is that should be, you know, there should be restrictions on funding till they improve their performance. And I'll definitely try to push for that measures, because right now, obviously, what the school district is doing, it's not working. Why we are at the lowest bottom 50% of Pennsylvania schools? Why our literacy rate is less than, like, you know, 43% in math and less than 43% in reading and less than 23% in math? The things need to improve.
Well, let's stay right there for just one second, Aaron. So I think with those numbers, and I think it's important for our listeners to realize that, that right there, those numbers prove that there's no correlation between spending obscene amounts of money and increasing educational output.
Right.
Is exactly what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, like, it is a time that people need to wake up. They need to start questioning. They need to start, you know, asking those logical questions that, you know, when the teachers in school district are getting paid twice than the private schools, why are they not performing right? Right? They are getting all that benefits, the salaries, and then they have all that other resources available, the counseling, you know, the medical, the free lunches, everything. What is that they are missing that they are not performing well? And I believe it all comes back to some basic fundamentals that we have, you know, really, really screwed up on. I'm sorry for that word, but like that's what we have done.
The truth is the truth, Aaron.
Yeah, we have stopped teaching the values to our children. We have took God out of our schools. And this is the reason, because these are all the symptoms.
Yep.
The crimes, you know, this inflation, the gas prices, international crisis. You know, blessed is the nation whose God is our Lord. So as a nation, as long as we honor God, we obey God, we were strong and we were prosperous, just like the nation of Israel. However, when you leave God, when you abandon God and you think you are smarter than God, you know God better than God about gender, you know better than God about the marriage, and that's what happens to you as a society. And that's where the whole problem is right now. We are not teaching our kids our Judeo-Christian values upon which this country was founded on. You know, all of our founding fathers were very dedicated and committed people. They were people of faith. And now, you know, these radical leftists, these liberals, they are not even Democrats who are controlling the narrative of Democratic Party. They are godless people. They are attacking gender. They are attacking marriage. They hate God. They hate Christians. You know, they hate people of faith because they believe they have their own religion, where there is no concept of, gender, there is no concept of marriage. Everything is okay. You know, so they are pushing that abominations. They are pushing for that lifestyle that are sinful, that are disastrous to human society. They are destroying the family. They are destroying our faith. And they are really, really on the verge of taking our country to a collapse. But as a politician, I'm not afraid to tell you guys that, because I'm not a politician. I'm a father, I'm a husband, and as a man of faith, I'm telling all of you, whether you wanted to vote for me or not, but this country needs God back. This country must put back the Judeo-Christian values that they took out. We must be supporting the traditional marriage. We must be teaching our children at the schools, there is a God, you are accountable to him. You shall not kill, you shall not steal, you shall honor your father and mother. Those are the basics we got to teach our children in the school system.
So
I'll push for them.
Yeah, so Aaron, so as a congressman, one of the things that you will have an enormous effect on is the weak immigration policies that this country is having. And we see the results of this weak immigration policy with all the illegal aliens, with the fentanyl crisis coming in, especially in the city of Philadelphia. We see overdose deaths happening constantly. So from your standpoint on the federal level as a congressman, what would be your what would you like to see? What would be Aaron Beshear's policy to help curb this illegal immigration that obviously the Biden administration is basically letting an open door policy right now? How would you want to help solve that issue?
Well, it's so simple, and it's just, let's use our common sense. Let's close the borders. We need to close the borders because just look at the fentanyl, look at the illegal drugs, look at the human trafficking, the cartel that's active there. And just let's go in Philadelphia, look at Kensington, all right? People are dying on the streets. The precious lives, the beautiful lives are like lost in the streets. They're addicted, you know, there's so many drug dealers shooting violence. And it's all happening because the borders are opened, because Biden administration just doesn't want to deal with that issue. They are in the state of denial. Their policy is to keep the borders open, and that's what's creating all this chaos in our country. So don't get me wrong. I'm an immigrant myself. I came to United States in 2001. But we went through that immigration process. My father sponsored me. You know, took me a long time, took my brother a long time, took my uncle 16 years. Our family's been here for half a century almost in the United States of America. But we understand that this is land of immigrants. However, you cannot just let the illegal immigration to happen because, first of all, our country cannot afford that. You know, we can see the dire effects, the negative consequences of those policies, the illegal drugs, the human trafficking that's happening. You know, every other, you know, month you will hear that a boat was sank in the water, people lost their life. Because when you send a message to the international, folks that, you know, your borders are open, you welcome everyone, that's a wrong message to send. You got to tell people that if they wanted to come to America, they have to do it the right way, the legal way. You know, they have to apply for immigration. They have to apply for visit visa. But people should not be just, flowing into our country, without any security clearances, without any, check and balances. And also on the economic side, the jobs are going to be lost. You know, the cities are going to be overcrowded. The country is going to be, losing a lot of, precious lives, which we have continued to, seen on our streets, people getting shot, a lot of crimes, even, they're sometimes hard to trace because the illegal people who are here involved in a lot of crimes, and sometimes they're not documented. So how are you going to hold them accountable when you don't have any records on that?
Well, you know,
so I will advocate for strict enforcement of, enforcing the borders. Law enforcement should be there to stop the illegal immigration, period. No compromise on that.
And quite honestly, Aaron, I mean, as you said, you came here legally, and you followed the procedures, and that's all you're asking. So you're not anti-immigrant; you're anti-illegal immigration. You know, you don't go into somebody's house, and you don't break into somebody's house and then just say, "Hey, can I live here?" It's not the same. It's not the same. We don't want to refuse anybody the opportunity. Just do it the correct way. That's all we're asking. Aaron, we have to take a break. Hang on a little bit. Obviously, we have Stacey Garrity calling in. But I want you to hang on because I want to continue this conversation on the other side of the hour. You're listening to the Conservative Voice here on WWDB 860 AM. We'll be back right after this short break and a station ID.
WWDB 860 AM Philadelphia and WPEN HD2 Burlington, Philadelphia.
Hi, this is Don from the Conservative Voice.
Are you hungry? Looking for great food at reasonable prices? Look no further than Oroso, A Touch of Sicily, located at 530 Lincoln Highway, Business Route 1 in Fairless Hills, PA. Oroso's features a homemade, gluten-free menu for all their menu items and is a BYOB establishment. Open 7 days a week for lunch and dinner, and for breakfast Saturday and Sunday, Oroso offers everything from pizza, sandwiches, and appetizers to wonderful entrees that include seafood, pasta, and steak. So whether you're looking for a hearty breakfast, a quick lunch, or a wonderful dinner with your friends and family, Oroso is the place to go. Oroso is located at 530 Lincoln Highway, Business Route 1 in Fairless Hills, and can be found on the web at www.oroso.com. You can also give them a call at 215-295-1311, and you can also download their app from the Google Play Store. Oroso, the place your taste buds will thank you for finding.
And you're listening to the Conservative Voice here on WWDB 860 AM. And we're going to continue our conversation with Aaron Beshear, the Republican candidate for the second congressional district in the state of Pennsylvania. So, Aaron, before we went on break, we were talking about illegal immigration and how you would handle that on a federal level. And I think you know, obviously you hit the nail on the head that securing the border would be the most quickest and easiest way to stem the flow of not only the illegal immigrants, but the growing fentanyl problem coming into the country. I mean, one of the things that I saw on the news was they're now making fentanyl in to make it basically look like little candies, and they're trying to distribute it to kids. From your standpoint, I mean, obviously in the city of Philadelphia, you see it firsthand. Not only do we have this fentanyl coming across the border, but we also understand that most of this fentanyl is coming from China. So on a federal level, you know, what would you support as far as holding China accountable for their part in, let's just focus on the fentanyl for now, because we know China does a lot of stuff from a technological standpoint. Obviously, we understand about COVID-19 that came from the Chinese lab. But let's focus on the major problem in this country, which is the fentanyl that is killing our children, killing our adults, and basically, you know, destroying our country.
Well, I am absolutely all in for holding Chinese accountable, because, you know, somehow this country has a mindset that they just wanted to dump their products, their services to the rest of the world, but they don't want to, you know, accept any other, and it's just not America, but the other countries as well, they don't want to accept their products and services into their markets. So it's like one way winning game. That's what they've been playing, especially with America. They've been dumping their stuff, you know, their low quality products here in America. Now every other store, you know, the wholesale, like, you know, any retailers, you look at the product and made in China. So it's like more than 60% of merchandise which is dumped into our country is by China. However, they don't want it to do the fair game. They never wanted to give access to our companies to, you know, their country. And I'm a firm believer of, like, you know, holding them accountable, putting the tariffs on them, and reviving our own manufacturing here in United States, because that's what's going to create more jobs. We must be independent. We must have our own energy production and also our manufacturing, which we have killed. Well, by, you know, just buying from other countries like China, and that gives them the cushion to, you know, blackmail us, you know, to do the things that shouldn't be done. And especially as you mentioned about the drugs, you know, whether we acknowledge it or not, but China is competitor to America.
Right.
They are trying to become the global dominant force in the on the picture of international politics. So the sooner we can control that, the better it would be. Because I'm just scared to see that day when dollar loses its value. Because right now we are the king money, but how they are building those alliances, China, Russia, all those radical Islamic countries, the bloc that they are building. When the dollar will lose its value, the things that we are buying for like $10, we wouldn't be able to buy it for like $200 because we have killed our manufacturing. We keep buying from others. And if we lose that status of dollar in the international market, that day will be disastrous to our country, so hard. I just don't want to see that. That's why we got to keep the America stronger, American dollar stronger, and we must play our positive role in international politics.
Well, and one of the things that I thought that came out during the pandemic was we got to see firsthand how the Chinese not only controlled the production of a lot of our antibiotics and a lot of our drugs that we couldn't get from them, but then they went ahead and since they knew, and this is what blows my mind, since they knew the severity of COVID-19 and refused to tell everybody about it, they purchased all the N95 masks and were hoarding the masks. So nobody in America could get masks because the Chinese purchased all the masks because they knew ahead of time. So, again, obviously you're running for federal office. So, obviously, you would play a big part in holding China accountable for their actions, not only from a political standpoint, but from an economic standpoint as well. And that's why I wanted to ask you that question. Aaron, before I let you go, because we have our next guest coming on, where can people find out more about you and about your campaign for Congress?
Well, they can visit my website, BashirForCongress.com, and they can also just call me, and I do not mind giving my cell number because as a representative of people, I believe I should be accessible, and it's like 215-954-7836, and it's 215-954-7836. So they can always call me. They can go to my website, BashirForCongress.com, and just last 30 seconds. So Philadelphia, if you're listening to me, if you're sick and tired of shootings and violence in Philadelphia, if you're sick and tired of seeing that crimes, the illegal drugs, the people dying on the streets of Philadelphia, please think beyond the party lines. Those people who you have been voting, the Democratic liberals, they don't care. Their policies are not working. If their policies had worked, Philadelphia would be much different. This is why you should vote for me. I'm Aaron Bashir. I'm running for U.S. Congress. I'll put you guys first, and I'll make sure that we reduce the crime, we eliminate the crime, we eliminate the illegal drugs, and we put American working, hardworking people first in this country.
Okay, thank you very much, Aaron. It was a pleasure talking to you, and I'm sure we'll have you on again before the election. Thank you very much. Okay? Thanks, Aaron. Take care now. Okay, so our next guest will be Pennsylvania State Treasurer Stacey Garrity. But before we start talking to Stacey, I just wanted to mention this part of the show will be brought to you by Salvatore's Cucina. Salvatore's Cucina is located in Levittown, Pennsylvania. It is a BYOB establishment. And Sal makes great Italian food. So if you're in the area, please stop by. And he's at the corner of Oxford Valley Road and Woodburn Road in Levittown, PA. So our next guest is a friend of the show. She's been on many times. I had the pleasure of interviewing her when on the deck of Senator Mastriano's house when she was running for state treasurer. And she pulled off something that a lot of the experts said that couldn't be done. She actually won as a conservative candidate in the state of Pennsylvania, being outspent about 8-10-1. Pennsylvania State Treasurer Stacey Garrity. Stacey, welcome.
Hey, Don. Great to be with you.
Great to have you. So we're now finishing up your second year in office, I guess, right around pretty soon, correct?
Yeah, I'm about 19 months in.
So I know you've been busy. I know you got a lot going on. You've done great things with the unclaimed property thing. You've instituted a lot of things in the treasurer's office to benefit the people of Pennsylvania. I'd like to say you've done us proud. Let's talk about some of the things you've accomplished in your 19 months in office.
Sure. Okay. So we set up a brand new outreach program, which is really great because, you know, I've traveled to all 67 counties two consecutive years, so finished up at the end of September, all 67 counties this year. And what I find out is people don't know about, you know, the tremendous programs that the state has to offer. So set up an outreach team, just hired somebody from the Southeast, hired somebody from the Southwest. We're looking to put somebody in North Central. They're actually being trained right now, and just going to hire somebody from the Northeast, and we'll be all set. Also, a huge push on unclaimed property, as you mentioned. Gave back 285 military decorations so far. So in our vault, we also have, you know, military decorations from veterans, largely from abandoned safe deposit boxes. And, of course, what I say is those are the items that are priceless in our vault. So we've had a big push to get them back to the veterans or the veterans' family. You know, because when you think about it, every single ribbon, campaign medal, every piece of memorabilia tells, you know, a story about the service member's sacrifice to our great nation. Most recently, I wrote a letter to President Biden because did you know our federal veterans homes, and think about it, this is our VA where our veterans rely on for their everyday health care plus, you know, longer-term nursing home needs. So they're still going off March 2020 guidelines. And so now this doesn't apply to states, the state-run facilities, and it doesn't apply to nursing homes. What happens in these federal VAs is families have to make an appointment to go see their loved one. Mm-hmm. Then they're not allowed in the room. So they either have to visit in the lobby or, you know, another designated area. They haven't allowed volunteers into these establishments since March 9th of 2020, and these veterans haven't had any outings. So, in other words, they have not been off the premises since March 9th of 2020. And when you think about it, only bureaucrats in the Biden administration would treat our brave men and women that fought for our freedom, would keep them locked up in basically a bureaucratic form of solitary confinement.
I am blown away by what you just told me. I had no idea about this. I mean, you talk about dishonoring people that have served our country. How is this even possible? I mean,
well, you know, exactly.
And look, I know you as a 30-year veteran. It must disgust you.
Oh, I am disgusted. It's unconscionable. It's unscientific. It's unpatriotic, and it's un-American. And I will say that Senator Mastriano immediately put something up on his Facebook calling, you know, for basically these policies to immediately be changed, as well as Dr. Oz did. So,
Have you gotten any response at all from anybody in the Biden administration?
No, I haven't. I addressed the letter to President Biden as well as the VA Secretary McDonough, who, when you look at his confirmation hearing with the Senate, he promised to take care of veterans. So I'm calling on him to keep his promise.
Well, I'm glad you brought this to my attention because obviously I know some people as well. So I think it's time we start beating the drum on this a little bit. I mean, I'm utterly shocked about this. I quite honestly, what he's wanted a few times, I think I'm a little speechless here. So, this is just wonderful.
Dan, I didn't realize this was happening until July.
Right.
When it was brought to my attention. And so, you know, I called over to the VA, basically got the runaround. They gave me a number in DC to call. And of course, when you call the number, nobody answers, no way to leave a message. I also sent a copy of the letter to all of our congressional delegation. And so, you know, I'm not going to let them hide this anymore.
No, well, they can't. I mean, I know myself. I mean, I talked to quite a few of the congressmen from here, from Pennsylvania. And I will definitely, I know I'll start bugging them about this because, you know, somebody's got to hold somebody accountable here. I mean, basically, you know, from what you're telling me, they're still operating on COVID protocols, you know.
Yes. Yes. In fact, they want the facility to be 2 weeks 100% COVID free before they'll basically open it up. And that's never going to happen. We know that. This isn't 2020.
Right.
This, you know, it's going to be around just like the flu is.
And that's the thing that obviously they actually are playing political CYA is what they're doing.
Yes, they are.
Yeah, I mean, and that's what it is. I mean, they you know, just like when President Biden first, he, you know, said he had, you know, because of the emergency, he was allowed to forgive all those student loans. And then they interview him and they tell him, and he says, well, the emergency's over. Well, then you're breaking the law. You know, I mean, so which is it? You know, and it's like.
Exactly. Is the pandemic over like President Biden said or not?
Right. And if the pandemic's over, then why are these veterans being basically held prisoner?
Well, they are. And, you know, isolation, we know that isolation kills.
Right.
And
well,
so
it's a recipe for depression.
It is.
It's a recipe for the families not to have an interaction with their loved ones. You know, they can't go and see their father or their grandfather or their aunt or their uncle. You know, there's no birthdays. They can't go to weddings. I mean, there's just
This is the thing too. So
this is criminal. If you ask me, this is
criminal. I agree. And so the Wilkes-Barre VA supports 18 counties. So when you think about it, some of these family members are driving hours to see their loved ones.
Right.
And if you can only allow one person in because there's a case of COVID instead of, you know, the entire family, not to mention that they're not allowed in their rooms, so they can't even, you know, check out their quality of living. It's shameful.
You know, I hate to say it, but our country, you know, has lost its focus, its compass, its direction. You know, there was a time when our veterans were revered, that our elderly were revered, that we went out of the way to take care of them. I mean, look, I know, you know, that you've gone out of your way to help your mom. I, you know, when my mom was diagnosed with brain cancer, you know, we instead of putting her in a home, we brought her home and took care of her at the house. And then when my dad got diagnosed with leukemia, I brought him to my house to take care of him, you know. And it was like, you know, hey, if I had to change his diaper or whatever, I didn't look at it as a chore. I look at it as something, you know, I loved my dad, you know, I loved my mom, you know, and they took care of me when I couldn't take care of myself. And, you know, so why can't I return the favor? And there was a time in our country, you know, in the 40s and 50s, you know, that the elderly lived in their homes with their children, and, you know, they were part of the family unit. And we've gotten away from that. You know, we it's almost like they're discarded, you know, and it's a sin. It really is.
I agree. So I'm going to do whatever I can. I'm not going to let this go.
Well, you can count on me for whatever help you need on this. You know, I mean,
thank you. I appreciate it.
You know, let's not let it die, so to speak, on the vine.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
So, but, you know, let's also talk about some of the other programs that you've put in. Now, one of the ones that I think is underreported that you've done is the when people have a new addition to the family.
Yes, Keystone Scholars. So we set aside $100 for every baby born, and this is babies born after January 1st, 2019, mm-hmm. for their parents to claim to help them, you know, with their education. And we're working hard because we know that the earlier people start saving for education, you know, the less student debt they're going to have. And so it's really a tremendous program, this Keystone Scholars. And we know, you know, that people that are saving for college, these kids are four times more likely to go to some sort of, you know, secondary program. And I also want to push the fact that, so our PA 529 College and Career Savings Program, this is not just for four-year schools. It's for community schools. It's for technical schools. So, you know, how important skilled labor is, particularly right now. So this really benefits skilled labor. And a lot of people think these programs are just for four-year degrees, and that's not true. And there's tremendous tax advantages, Don. So
what
income growth.
What would be the procedure for somebody that say they wanted to get this Keystone Scholars, you know, money, the $100 or whatever? What would they have to do? Is it a complicated procedure? Is it pretty easy?
It's very easy. So all they do is they could go into our PA 529 website.
Mm-hmm.
It tells you exactly how to do it. And if they need help, we have a number and we have people just waiting to help them. So basically they would claim the $100 and it would basically, they'd be setting up their 529 account.
So they'd basically be all set, you know, for the future. And then they can contribute to that 529 account at any time?
Anytime they can contribute to it. They can do recurring, recurring contributions. They can, you know, put as little as a few dollars in it. I mean, it is super easy. And what I've encouraged people is if you have families, you know, when you have grandparents and they want to know, you know, what to get you,
mm-hmm.
they can do a gift.
Right.
And they can do it right on the website and they can contribute to, you know, niece or nephew, grandparents, parents, they can make a gift right into the 529 account.
I mean, that is a program that I think is beneficial to a lot of families. And it could be beneficial, like you said, to you know, not only, like you said, a four-year school, but community college, trade school, whatever. I mean, you know, I think it's a situation that their kids do not have to be saddled with enormous student debt. There are other avenues to go. And this is just one, you know, tool in the toolbox that can help in that situation. So
Exactly.
So, and I can tell you, and I'll tell all the listeners too that Stacy's staff is fantastic. She brought you. I remember when you came into to Pastor Johnson's church in North Philadelphia, and you brought your staff with you, and they were so helpful to the people when you were helping people claim their unclaimed property. And we gave we. I'm not saying we. I was there, but you guys did the work. But you were able to give back so much money to people in that impoverished neighborhood that day, that it was just fantastic.
Well, I was honored to be there, as was my staff, and we were so happy that so many people came in off the street and allowed us to check to see if they had anything waiting for them, because we know that 1 in 10 Pennsylvanians has unclaimed property. And we have $4 billion worth, and I'm really, really want to get it back to its rightful owners.
And it's really pretty easy. I mean, why don't you tell everybody just what they can do to just check and see if they even have property there?
Sure. They can do it right on their phone. All they have to do is go to patreasury.gov/unclaimed property, type in their name, and it'll come right up. And it takes about 2 minutes to process unless it's a complicated claim. And if it's complicated, they can call the office. We can help. But generally, it's very easy, and the average claim is about $1,500.
Well, and I'm sure with the Biden economy the way it is, $1,500, well, might get you a couple dozen eggs and a loaf of bread now.
Yeah,
but, you know, and maybe
exactly,
half a tank of gas, but you know.
You're right. But with Biden inflation, every little bit helps.
Exactly correct. I don't want to go off on that tangent. We could talk about that for hours.
Exactly.
So one of the things that I know you've been busy with is you've been on the campaign trail talking to numerous people about not only Senator Mastriano, but Dr. Oz as well.
Yes, in fact, I'm doing it again this evening in Lackawanna County.
I just had Doug on earlier. He said you're going to be with him in Erie tonight?
No, I'm not. They asked me to, but I was already committed to go to Lackawanna.
Oh, okay.
I wish I was going to be in Erie, but I think I'm going to be with him next week He's going to be in the Northeast.
Oh, okay. Yes.
So I'm planning to be with him then.
Okay.
They still have to send me the details. But yes, I go to, I don't know how many counties a week. It seems like definitely like 5 or 6 a week, and basically stumping for the ticket because this is the most important election of our lifetime, Don. And I know we say that every year, but this truly is because our country's really headed in the wrong direction.
Well, one of the things that I opened up the first hour with when I was talking is that how this poor woman that interviewed John Fetterman is getting roasted by the mainstream media just for doing just for doing her job. I mean, there was a time when a reporter's responsibility was to report the facts, and all she wasn't making fun of him because he had a stroke. What she was saying, all she was doing was saying that he was having a hard time processing things from an auditory standpoint. Okay,
we know that's true,
right? And which I think, if I remember correctly, most of the time in the Senate, it's made up of debate. Okay, so if you can't understand what somebody is saying, I think that would be a problem. So I think that she's doing her job as a responsible journalist, not to criticize, but just to put the facts out there. And the thing with Fetterman that bothers me is that he is refusing to release his medical records.
That's right.
And that's a problem. Just like Josh Shapiro is refusing to debate Doug Mastriano, John Fetterman is refusing to release. What do they have to hide? So let's talk about that, Stacey. You know, what do these people have? Why are they so afraid? If they're so proud of what they stand for and what they represent, what are they so afraid of?
Their record.
Right.
They have absolutely horrible records. I mean, they basically were rubber stamps for Governor Wolf. And if anybody thinks that Governor Wolf was bad, a Josh Shapiro would make Tom Wolf look like the good old days.
And I think that is lost on people. People are lost on the fact that if Josh Shapiro even sniffs the governor's office, we don't have a prayer of winning the presidential election in 2024.
Exactly.
And that's why that it is so important that Doug and Carrie win the election in 2022, because they can set the tone for bringing Pennsylvania back from the abyss that the Wolf administration has taken us to. And all Josh Shapiro is going to do is drive us further and further into that abyss. I mean, he has proven with his track record of being soft on crime, suing the Little Sisters of the Poor not once but twice, suing to let boys into girls' locker rooms. I mean, I hate to say it, but his filing an amicus brief helped that poor girl get raped in Virginia by that kid. Okay.
Well, it did.
You know,
if you look, Doug just put out a YouTube video, which is excellent. So I hope everybody will go out and watch it.
Right. And you know, the funny thing is I tell people this all the time, and just to give you a little preempt. So my next guest will be our Lieutenant Governor candidate, Carrie Del Rosso.
Oh, wonderful.
And she's on hold right now. So I think I'll bring her in just so we can say hi, but then I'll finish up with you. Carrie, okay. I got Stacey on the line.
Hello, Madam Treasurer.
Hello, my friend.
Where are you crisscrossing to these days?
I'm in Pittsburgh right now. As soon as I hang up with Don, I'm headed to Lackawanna to speak for the ticket.
Okay, good.
So,
good.
Yeah.
I can't be there tonight. I'm heading to Erie tonight.
Good. You know what? I wanted to go to Erie, but I was already committed to Lackawanna, but that's okay because I'm speaking for the ticket. But hopefully I'm going to be with Doug in the Northeast next week. And we were just talking about the record of Josh Shapiro and John Fetterman. And how this is truly the most important election of our lifetime.
It really is. And I did catch catch the tail end of what you're saying. And it's very, very important to emphasize that Shapiro is a career politician, and he's never seen the inside of a courtroom. All he's done is build political capital, and it's part of the problem. There's been many people that have called me offline. They're afraid to speak up because they're afraid he's going to come after them again. And I think that that needs to be talked about throughout this campaign as well.
Well, and the funny thing is, and I tell people this, I said, I've had the pleasure, and I put that in air quotes, of watching Josh start out as a commissioner in Montgomery County. And of course, he didn't finish that term because he became attorney general, you know, and now he's not going to finish this term. Well, he is, because he's not going to be governor. But his plan is not to finish this term, because overall, his overall goal is to be president of the United States. And so
That's right. And so
he has no desire to serve the people of Pennsylvania. He only has a desire to serve himself. And we've seen that over and over again with the things he does. So it's important for people to realize that when we have patriots like you, Stacey, and obviously somebody like Carrie, you know, who is willing to stand up to the establishment, willing to fight, you know, I mean, Stacey, you and I have told this story many times, and we're not going to name names, but we know a certain someone who handed you a check and said, "What a waste of money this is. I could just rip this up and it would get me the same result." And then, of course, after you won, it was like, "Oh yeah, I was behind you 100%." Da 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 da. You know, you know. So, and we both know who that.
Gosh.
Yes, go ahead.
Yes, we do know who it is. But I want to say that, you know, Doug Mastriano, Carrie Del Rosso, their only ambition is to serve, and that's the leadership that we need in Harrisburg.
Thank you for saying that. It's the truth. And I will just say this too. I had an event last night in the district that I won, 33rd Legislative District. There were 400 people. I was so tickled by this, because this was a Democrat district. People want change. People want the people to stand up. And Stacey, you're just like one of us, right? Bradford County girl. Like, we want what's right for the state of Pennsylvania. That's what Pennsylvanians are. They're true to Pennsylvania.
Well, you know, the funny thing, I say this to people, you know, so when Stacey was running, I still remember, Stacey, remember that first interview we did from Doug's deck?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, and
I brought my mother with me.
and we ended up with like over 20,000 Facebook views on that interview from Doug's deck. But
yes.
the point is that you were willing to do it, but B, it showed people, you know, where you stood as far as that you cared about the people of Pennsylvania. And so, and at the time, all the experts said you didn't have a prayer, you know, that Joe Torricella, that he was the Democrats' golden boy. He was going to be lined up to run for Senate, you know, and you got outspent, what was it, 8-1 or 10-1? It was something like
11-1.
And yet, you know, and I remember all this, you know, oh, you can't campaign with Trump. You can't talk about Trump. You can't do this. And you did it all. You were on stage with Trump. You were, you know, I remember, you know, when you were up there with Trump, you know, and it was like, and yet you won, you know. And
that's because good candidates win races.
Right.
And I will say that out loud. Stacey, you're 100% right. You know, we're 24 days out too. And people are calling me going, "What happens when you lose?" And I say, "I'm going to win." You know, I'm going to win. Like, I'm sorry. The amount of groundswell that I've seen is just out of control. I mean, there's just no way we lose.
Well,
I think we just keep our foot on the gas and win.
Well, Carrie, you know, so we had a meet and greet with Doug in Chester County a couple of weeks ago. And we were set up. We were expecting, I don't know, 150, maybe 200 if we were lucky. Okay. And the next thing you know, we got 500 people in the room and we're changing a meet and greet into a rally. Now, of course, the state police were not happy with us for having to change it around, but we had people lined up around the building, and we would have been there for hours shaking hands, you know. And so, and then we had a rally in Bucks County at the Fuge for Doug, and we had over 1,000 people there. You know, if people need to understand that this is more than just your everyday campaign. This is a groundswell. This is a movement. And we're talking to people in Philadelphia. We're talking to people in Pittsburgh. We're not just sticking to the middle of the state where we know it's red. We're going to Delaware County. We're going to Pittsburgh. We're going to Philadelphia. We're going to Montgomery County. You know, little Josh and his minions better realize that they're not getting nothing for free. And with people like Stacey helping the campaign, Charlie Giroux, Dave White, you know, and then when you have candidates like Doug Mastriano and Carrie Del Rosso, who just tell people the truth. That's all that you guys. Right. That's all you guys are doing. It's just telling the truth.
And unfortunately, we're getting blocked by media outlets. It's incredibly hard. Like even the 400 people last night show up in my district. Not one Trib reporter, not one Post-Gazette reporter, but Ceasefire shows up in my district for four people with signs, and they do a release. Think about how bad and how censored we are right now. And right. I've never seen it so bad. And I did media relations. That was my business. I'm, like, just shocked of how bad they are silencing us. I don't know, Stacey, about you, but I feel like they are. I think they're working against us.
Well,
they absolutely are.
One of the things I'm going to bring up, and I don't have any proof of this yet, but I'm looking into it. So I'm up on 322 in Newtown the other day, and every campaign sign is gone from everywhere. And then last night we get a notice from the state police barracks in Gettysburg telling us that they've been instructed to tell PennDOT to remove all these campaign signs. Now, they're taking everybody's, okay, but off of the state highways, which they never did before, never.
Yep.
Okay. And so I sat there and I was discussing this with some of my people last night, and I said, you know, it almost seems to me that some attorney general has instructed the state police that, you know, hey, this is a law. You should enforce this, because he might be a little worried. You know, I don't know if it's true or not, but, you know, it just kind of, you know, it's possible.
Well, I will say this, and this will give everybody hope, is that I feel the same way that I felt when I beat Frank Dermody. Because people are becoming unhinged behind the scenes, just like what you said, Dawn. They're taking stuff up. Look, it's the same concept here. I mean, I am seeing people just fall apart, and I'd be falling apart too if I spent $25 million to lose. Right?
Yes.
I mean, think about it. I mean, Dermody spent $2 million against me to lose most of the man's ever spent on me in my life, and now I got $25 million that's up against us. And look, I see what they're doing. Just so you know, I'm on it. Stacey, we're going to win this race. I appreciate all your help with this too, Stacey. You out stumping. Like, I wish I could be in Lackawanna County tonight, but I've got so many other commitments, and I have a little bit of a head cold right now. I don't know if you could tell in my voice, but I'm drinking tea out of my Mastriano cup right now.
Well, you know, when I was talking to Doug in the first half of the show, and we were talking about the difference is that I found out that Josh is paying people $50 to put lawn signs on their house at their house, you know, and yet we got people that we can't get enough signs to give them. And I just find it interesting. Like when we, and Carrie, you were there. So when we did the Latino Town Hall in Philadelphia, and they had that ring of protesters out front, you know, the one with the bullhorn. Okay. But did you notice after Doug came in, they disappeared? And the cop, when I was talking to the cops afterwards, they said to me, he goes, oh yeah, they're at all the, they're paid protesters. The cops told me they're paid protesters. And once the candidate shows up and he walks in, they leave. And that's why they all disappeared. Okay. So again, You know, we're in a battle here. This is what I call a line in the sand election. And this is a line in the sand election that not only is going to determine the future of Pennsylvania, but it's going to determine the future of the United States of America. Because if we don't win this governor's election, then we don't win the presidential election in 2024. It's as simple as that. And
look,
if
we don't win this governor's election, the system is totally corrupted more than anyone can even imagine.
Right.
And that's what I am saying that from the bottom of my heart. Scranton girl, raised, seen so much in my life. Look, our system is that corrupted if we don't win this race. And I have lost faith in the system if we don't win this race. Because the good candidates need to come out on top. And I truly believe in my heart and my heart of all hearts that we're going to win this race.
And I think that that this is going to prove that when I'm talking to crowds about this, our particular campaign, I tell everybody, I said, we are, and I always use this reference, that if you ever watch the movie Moneyball, that we are the Moneyball of politics. We're not following anybody's playbook. We're, you know, all the experts are saying to us, do this, do that, do this, do that, you know, and we just do what we do. And yet we win. You know, they said Doug was going to lose by double digits. We won by over 20 points. You know, they you know, Kerry, I mean, people didn't know who you were, and yet you won by what, over 120,000 votes?
Yep.
You know, I mean, you know, but, you know, and I give credit to Stacey. Because a couple months before the election, when we were talking about the lieutenant governor's race, Stacey said to me, well, I think Kerry Del Rosa is going to win. And I said, I don't even know who that is, you know, because I'm here, you know, and you were out west, you know. And because the first time I saw you was on the stage at the Newtown Athletic Center. It's the same time I met one of the other guys, Coleman, I think was his name. But, you know. Now that I've got to know you, I can understand why you won. So,
well, I appreciate it. You know, Stacey was one of the first people I called. I think I texted her at 6 o'clock in the morning one day. I was like, I need to talk to you. And of course she responds right back in 5 minutes. She's like, I'm driving. Call me now at 6 a.m. and I did. I called her on the phone and I said, I'm thinking of really considering running for lieutenant governor. She was like, I think it's a great idea. And you know what? Another woman that's, you know, it's one of those things, like, you know, you look to another woman who's been to the political arena. Politics are nasty. They are not a fun place to be in, even in my own neighborhood. I ran into a very good friend this morning. And again, I have a head cold, so I'm kind of a little bit blocked. And she said to me, are you okay? I said, yeah, a little bit of a head cold. I got to drive to Erie tonight, but, you know, I'm on the phone doing things. And she said to me, look, this is the same race you ran against Germany. People are going to do the same thing. And I'm looking at her and she's kind of like an aunt to me, you know, this woman. And I was like, wow, she's right. She knows it, you know, and that's the outsiders that are looking in. I feel good about this race.
Well,
and I think these next 24 days are very, very important to me and Doug. And well, he's the best.
Right.
You got to stick together like glue.
And the nice thing about it is that, what I see on the ground, one of the things that Barry Casper, who is the Bucks County coordinator for the campaign, we were talking about this, and Barry was instrumental in the Trump campaign in 2016. And Barry says to me one day, we're talking, and he says, you know what the Mastriano campaign is? He said, it's the Trump campaign in 2016, but it's on steroids. And I said to him, I said, really? I said, he goes, yeah. He goes, we didn't have the infrastructure that you have now. He said, we were scrambling around up until including election day. He said, that's how it was in 2016. He said, people didn't support Trump in the beginning, da, 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 da. He said, you guys had all this in place after, you know, for the primary and all that stuff like that. He said, so, you know, and I'm just taking from his experience of being in the Trump campaign in 2016. And he likens us to Trump on steroids, you know, that the Mastriano campaign, you know, that between what Doug is doing and what you're doing, Kerry, and what people like Stacey are doing, that Charlie Giroux is doing, like Dave White is doing, you know, you guys are all working hard. And, you know, the one thing I'm going to say, Stace, and this is important, you've done the 67 counties things twice, okay? And Doug had made a commitment to do 67 counties by October 1st. And I was involved in a lot of that, and I didn't realize how hard it was. So I commend
it's
you.
It's harder than you think.
It certainly is. It certainly is. You know,
I mean, started using it in my speeches. Pennsylvania is not Rhode Island.
Right.
It's just not. Like, I wish it was some days. It was such a big state.
There was one time in there, we did 8 counties in 3 days. And I was like, at the end of that, I was like, where am I? I don't even know where I'm at. You know?
Well, Don, I have to jump off, but I do want to close by saying I have been to all 67 counties, and there's a tremendous enthusiasm for this ticket.
Yes.
And we just have to keep at it for the next 3-plus weeks and get them over the finish line. And I know they're going to win.
I agree.
Stacey, thank you.
Thanks,
Stacey. Thank you so much. Have fun in Lackawanna tonight.
I'm sure I'll
kiss all my people.
I'm sure
for
I'll
me.
See you soon. I will.
Okay, take care.
Bye.
So, Carrie, obviously you're traveling all over the country, the state, and as I say, you're gathering frequent driver miles.
Don, it's a big state.
Yep. So you were in a Democratic stronghold last night. You were in Philadelphia before that. Obviously, it's obviously more friendly when you're in the middle part of the state. I mean, I understand that, but let's talk about the impact that you and Doug are making when you're visiting these Democratic areas.
So, interestingly enough, Doug got off the bus last night, and all the people were already waiting. He was running about 15 minutes late. Some of the people I knew personally, I was at their doors, but it was also the surrounding areas as well. And I said to Doug when he was coming off the bus, I said, you know, this is a Democrat district. This is where, you know, I flipped the seat. And even the people that were speaking last night were Democrats. And he didn't really know. I think he's running so fast and I'm running so fast too. I'm like, Doug, these people are with us. Like, this is where, you know, we build the momentum. And, I, you know, I spoke last night too. And I said, you know, the stronghold of the people that are down the street had to see all the cars there and think like, oh boy, because it's very important that people know that there is an uprising of people that are just mad. This is the mood of the electorate. This is the stuff that the polls don't gauge.
Yes.
I mean, when you're a pollster, you know, you go after people, and I think you see people who are, you know, your typical voters. But, you know, they're not up in Tioga County or down in, you know, down south in the farmlands of Lancaster polling these people. Because, you know, normally these people were not voting. These are the people in 2018 who probably didn't vote in the midterm. But in 2020, when they got shut down and their cow milk couldn't get to the distributor or a supplier, like, they're now mad. They don't poll. And I will say that, like, when I'm in the guts of the state and I see the Mastriano Del Rosso signs, it's not just the Mastriano sign from the primary, it's the new signs. I'm like, oh boy. And these are the big 4x8s, and like, it's just, there is a groundswell. And what Stacey said too, when we were talking about signs, one of the businesses in my district, he's a bus driver, or he's a bus business, transportation. He called me. He said, 20 Mastriano Del Rosso signs in my dumpster. I'm like, oh. And well, it's very, very frustrating for me, because that's what they are scared, and they will do anything. They will become unhinged. They are not nice people.
Well, and that's what I see. I see the fear starting to manifest itself into these irrational actions, and that these people don't realize that, you know, quite honestly, if they get caught, you know, they're going to face a pretty hefty fine. We actually, in the primary, we actually had two people, you know, face, just in Bucks County where I at, you know, we actually caught two people on camera doing stuff, and we're prosecuting. And so, you know, and they're going to be facing, you know, significant fines, you know. So, I mean, again, you know, when I think that the difference is that the message that you and Doug are putting out there is resonating with not only our base voters, but people that are tired of – they saw with the pandemic how an out-of-control government can destroy their lives. I mean, we're getting support in the Amish community, okay, which, you know,
yes.
They, you know, they hardly – they don't want to – you know, that's just not their thing to vote, you know, but yet they're there. You know, I had an event in Chester County last night where I had held a training and educational center for a bunch of people, and they took my last pack of 100 Amish cards that I had, you know, because there was Amish people there, and they said, can we take these back to the community? I said, sure, you know, that's what they're there for. And when we were at the Delaware County event, at the Bucks County event, we had the bishop of the Ukrainian Orthodox Church sit down and meet with Doug, and they want to support Doug and you. I mean, it's just – to me, it's like there are people that you normally would sit on the sidelines that are now engaged. I mean, I know you've got to be seeing that as well.
Oh, yeah. And that's what's so funny. When I came out to Chester and I was with you, was that a week or so ago?
Yes. Yep.
Like every day is like running into
it. Yeah, I know.
one of my friends who's on state committee in Chester texted me and she said, I didn't know half more than the majority of people in the room. So again, you know, you've got cycles of people that have been kind of engaged for 20 plus years in Pennsylvania politics and from the Republican Party that just have never seen sight of these people. And I think it's awesome that people want to vote because, again, you know, your vote is your voice. And too many people have kind of disengaged because they don't think their vote counts. Well, now people are confident that their vote is going to count because they want to, you know, they need to get Doug in there so he can appoint the Secretary of State so we can have these fair elections. And let's talk about election integrity for a second. So.
Sure.
The sample ballot that went out had me as Carrie Lewis Del Rosso. So all the counties should have been printing them that way. So there was a couple counties up in the Northeast that were printing them as Carrie Lewis. They weren't printing them as Carrie Lewis Del Rosso,
uh-huh.
Which is illegal.
Right.
So, you know, I had a couple people call me. We got on it and we caught it in time. But at the same time, I mean, that's your Department of State not following through on something. That's a government-funded, taxpayer-funded initiative that is illegal. So, like, I again, when people say to me, well, are you going to discount the election? Well, if the election was fair, I'm not going to discount it. But if you're going to print my name wrong on the ballot, you better be sure I'm going to challenge you.
And, of course, they're going to say, oh, it was an oversight. You know, we didn't do it on purpose, but you just got to know. You know, that they're going to try to pull every little trick in the book that they can, you know, to try to disenfranchise you guys.
This is where, you know, you're going to truly see in these next 3 weeks, people will become unhinged because they are losing. And Doug and I will become even stronger as a unit because we are a unified ticket that want the same things. And it's so, so important right now that people get out the vote. They call their friends. They go knock on doors. They call, you know, their local committee people to say, hey, can you get me a list of people that I can call or get me a list of people that I can write a note to and drop in their mailbox, you know, with a stamp. If you're not, don't put anything in the mailbox unless it has a stamp on it. So, you know, there's things that we can do. And I think it's important that people are doing them. That's grassroots, right? A true grassroots campaign.
Absolutely. And the thing is that the message that you and Doug are putting out there is a basic message of individual rights and freedoms. I mean, you're not putting anything drastic out there. You're not trying to push the new Green Deal or windmills or whatever. You're pushing, you know, the right to make a choice for your family, for you, for your kids, you know, to be able to go to the school that you want to send your kids to the school you want to go to, Do I want to get an injection or not? It's just what this country was founded on, and that's all you guys are pushing.
Right. And, you know, you talk about windmills. I went to a drill site the other day, an EQT drill site, and the gentleman that was driving me up there, you know, he actually works as he has an environmental science degree, and he works as an environmental specialist, making sure that, you know, there's no spills and things like that. Like, he's on safety patrol. And he actually worked with a company who did windmills. And he said that people do not know the amount of wildlife that those windmills kill in terms of birds, bats, like things that are like, he kind of like laid it out for me. I'm like, boy, the left doesn't know about that. They'd be up there shutting those down.
I'm sure they would.
There's always something. And that's the problem is that they have money to have drive this elitist narrative that, you know, it's like save the earth. Well, why don't you just leave the earth be, you know, and do what we have more natural resources under our feet in this state. And that's the problem is that we've had people come into the state and infiltrate their narrative, and it's shutting us down. It's communism. It is.
Well,
done.
the shame of it is that I've always said that you can be environmentally friendly and still have a robust economy. You don't have to destroy one to grow the other. Capitalism, a free market finds a way. So we're running out of time, Kerry. I want to thank you for calling in. Where can people find out more information about you and Doug?
So Doug4Gov, that's the number 4, and Kerry4PA.com. There's two websites, but you can always, you know, get to Doug4Gov.com. We need support. We need financial support. You know, the commercials have been bad against us. I've told people to shut off the TV and go knock on doors.
Yes.
But if we want to continue to be up on TV and digital and make sure that our ads are getting out to the electorate that aren't listening in, please find a way to support us.
Yep.
Either donate to my campaign or Doug's. It's all going to the same place. We're going to win.
And or work a poll, you know, be a poll greeter, poll watcher. We need all that stuff for the campaign. Again, yep. I want to thank you for calling in. So what's your schedule like real quick before we run out of time?
I'm going to Erie tonight. Mm-hmm. Tomorrow, I am on my way up to the Northeast.
Right.
I'll be in Wayne County on Sunday.
Okay, super. Well, thank you very much. And thank you for running to be the next lieutenant governor of Pennsylvania. And I'll be there when you guys get inaugurated. Take care.